keep users safe or be fined billions of dollars. The EU sets new rules forcing tech companies to remove illegal content. How will the regulations work? And could they limit free speech on the internet? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. It's being hailed as the start of a new era for online protection. The European Union has approved rules to force big technology firms such as Google, Facebook, and Twitter to remove illegal content. If they don't, they could be fined billions of dollars. Tech companies lobbied against the Digital Services Act, or DSA. But EU politicians finalized the details on Saturday after 16 hours of negotiations. The rules outline how companies should keep users safe on the internet. Tech groups will also have to disclose how they tackle disinformation and propaganda. That effort gained momentum after Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
It's a wrap. We have the political agreement on the Digital Services Act. I have learned so much these 2 years, and the agreement tonight is better than the proposal that we tabled. And what we have achieved is that it's not a slogan anymore, that what is illegal offline should also be seen and dealt with as illegal online. No, now it is a real thing. Democracy is back, helping us to get our rights and to feel safe when we're online.
The regulations will come into force in 2024. Governments can ask companies to remove content that promotes terrorism, child sexual abuse, and commercial scams. Social media platforms such as Facebook and Twitter will have to make it easier for users to flag harmful content. That'll also apply to e-commerce companies like Amazon for counterfeit or unsafe products. Companies will be banned from using deceptive techniques to get people to sign up for services. Repeated breaches could see them banned from trading in the EU. Google responded by saying it'll work with policymakers on the details. Last month, the EU approved separate legislation to prevent anti-competitive behavior by tech companies. For example, sites like Google will be banned from favoring their own services and search engine results. Messenger apps, including WhatsApp, will have to operate with smaller platforms, and it'll prevent software being pre-installed on computers and phones. Tech companies say that could stifle innovation. All right, let's go ahead and bring in our guests from Brussels, Johannes Barke, coordinating spokesman for the Digital Economy, Research and Innovation at the European Commission. From Maastricht, Catalina Goanta, Associate Professor in Private Law and Technology at Utrecht University in the Netherlands. And from Paris, Thomas Vigne, Partner and Co-Chair of the Global Antitrust Group at Clifford Chance Law Firm. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Johannes, let me start with you today. Just how will these regulations work? And also, the fact that these new laws are to be enforced out of Brussels rather than through regulators in individual countries, is that going to make enforcement easier?
I think, first of all, yes, it will make enforcement easier. It's important to note that only the very big platforms, so if you reach 10% of Europeans, so that is 45 million users, then regulation and, enforcement will be with the European Commission in Brussels. So smaller platforms will not be, be supervised from Brussels. But it's, of course, easier if you have one set of rules for all platforms in the EU and also a central enforcement, yes, indeed.
Catalina, from your perspective, just how groundbreaking are these new rules and regulations? How significant is all this?
I think that especially the DSA, if we're looking particularly at the discourse, the public discourse around illegal content, this is definitely groundbreaking because the DSA is making the invisible visible. We have had a lot of rules in the past that have been applicable together with the e-commerce directive, which is the now predecessor, soon to be predecessor of the DSA, the Digital Services Act. There has been a lot of focus given to, you know, what kind of content should be online, such as the fact that platforms should be should have a lot of activities that are that they will be responsible for in terms of taking down, for instance, terrorist content or child pornography. So these rules have already been there before, but what the DSA is now bringing to the fore and therefore making the invisible visible is that there's a plethora of other rules that will be applicable at the same time with the traditional types of illegal content that we know. And we can see this in the definition of illegal content in the DSA currently, which says that illegal content is basically any kind of content that is a violation of national or European law.
Thomas, so now we have the Digital Services Act that has been approved. Earlier this year, the EU approved the Digital Markets Act. That's meant to tackle the market power of Silicon Valley firms. How far-reaching will these regulatory actions be?
Well, the Digital Markets Act that you just mentioned is rather revolutionary in terms of the obligations that it places upon the largest platforms, which might very well include a few European companies beyond the American ones that will undoubtedly be included. So there will be some very far-reaching obligations on those companies to enable interoperability, for example, with Facebook. Apple will be required to allow uses of different forms of in-app payment mechanisms. Google will have to rank its search results fairly without any preference for its own search results. So quite a number of really very serious obligations. In addition, of course, to the brand new political agreement on the DSA, which has already been mentioned.
Johannes, these regulations, this is all very, very big in scope. How will it be ensured that tech companies are going to police themselves?
Yeah, look, I mean, I would like to add maybe one thing to what Katharina said, because the DSA is not only looking at illegal content, but also at harmful content. So think about, for example, the content that promotes can increase eating disorders, for example, TikTok, these kind of young people following the feed and then maybe be inclined to, stop their eating habits. That is something that is not per se illegal, but it is harmful for the people who, or like for the young people especially, who follow this. So you will have, or not you, platforms will do need a risk assessment every year. And then the risks that are identified, that they need to be mitigated. Huh? And this will then be controlled by the Commission. And of course, there will be fines, for example. Huh? I mean, the fines can go up to 6% of worldwide global turnover. And in extreme cases, there could even be a ban of a certain platform. So that is basically the measures that we have, but it starts much earlier, right? It starts and really going through the risk assessment and seeing what are the risks identified, how are they mitigated, and is enough to be done or not.
Johannes, let me just follow up with you regarding something you said. You're talking about harmful content. Who gets to decide what is considered harmful content? I mean, I realize that there are a lot of details that still need to be worked out going forward, but who's going to be the arbiter on this?
Yeah, look, I mean, one thing is, of course, illegal content that's very easy to identify because this is, as Katharina said, defined by law. Now, if it comes to harmful content, it is really for the platforms themselves to look into what is their profile. So what is harmful or what can be harmful in terms of their content. So there are like four categories that need to be assessed beyond illegal content. So for example, restrictions to freedoms or harmful content that could, for example, affect minors or disinformation, So this, but it really depends. I mean, let's say a platform that is a porn platform has, of course, a different risk profile than, for example, an online marketplace, where it's more maybe be about counterfeit goods that may not be, let's say, dangerous, but still not compliant, So it really depends on the platform themselves to see what is the risk profile that I have as a platform and how do I need to mitigate this risk.
Catalina, I saw you reacting to a lot of what Johannes was saying there, so I'm going to let you jump in. But I also want to ask you the same question. I mean, who gets to ultimately decide what is deemed harmful content? And does that bring up freedom of speech concerns as well?
Absolutely. So the answer to your question actually is going to determine the success of the DSA, because I completely agree with Johannes. So there are a lot of different areas or different types of content that the DSA covers. So illegal content, you can look at this also from a very technical perspective, and you can see, okay, is there a provision at national or European level that is going to say you can't have advertising towards minors under a specific age? And if that exists, for instance, if we look at the Audiovisual Media Services Directive, then immediately if a type of content is going to be against this provision, it can be deemed illegal. Then we also have these systemic risks. So if a platform, through its architecture, through the fact that it amplifies types of content that could have an impact on decision-making, on the well-being of users, or on a lot of other aspects such as democracy, touching on what you were mentioning, freedom of expression, and also different political advertising freedoms, then it can be a matter of really trying to investigate. And this is where the procedural aspects of the DSA come very much in hand, to investigate what exactly are these systemic risks and how can we hone them in. The main problem here, or the keyword here, is going to be data access. And I really hope that in the enforcement of the DSA and also in the implementation, so first of all, in the design of the infrastructures that are going to have to implement it, there will be a sufficient attention paid to the fact that data shared by platforms is not necessarily reliable. So we have a little bit of a catch-22 situation. We have seen this before when Facebook tried to share research data, and we've seen that there were mistakes made, and a lot of research was deemed completely inaccurate because of the fact that Facebook data simply was not good.
So, Catalina, it sounds like what you're describing, you know, is rather complicated as far as, you know, setting up procedures in order to be able to implement this. I mean, do you foresee this going smoothly, or do you think this is going to get rather messy?
It very much depends on also the coordination of all of the stakeholders that have already powers of investigation. So, for instance, if you look at the National Consumer Protection Authorities, because consumer protection has been a very massive concern also for the DSA. Johannes was already mentioning the fact that that you can have various types of content. For instance, like counterfeit goods are sometimes also considered to be products that platforms need to look at and then remove. Also from a consumer protection perspective, not just the intellectual property perspective. But the problem here is that it very much depends on how all of these organizations that have a stake in the implementation of the DSA and in the enforcement of prior regulation will come together. If we take, there has been a lot written about the political compromise around the DSA and, for instance, targeted advertising that actually is meant to target minors. So who is a minor? In which country do we have which standard? Who is responsible? Is it advertising? Is it data protection? A lot of authorities nationally need to come into this web of not only substantive rules but also enforcement to figure out how exactly to divide or to coordinate the space of the digital market, because otherwise there will be a cannibalization of enforcement.
Thomas, from your vantage point, how do you think tech companies are going to deal with these new regulations? Do you expect that these new EU regulations are going to face a lot of legal challenges by big tech?
Well, one could suggest that perhaps the declarations of victory that have surrounded this political agreement might be a bit premature, in the sense that it seems to me, at least, that there is a great deal that remains to be seen about how the DSA is enforced, how harmful content, as you suggest, is defined, and how these new rules will be implemented by the tech companies. I do find that there is quite a lot of vagueness in the new proposed law, because it's not yet fully adopted. And it's going to be difficult, I believe, for tech companies to know exactly what they have to do and what they may not do. So I think there's a great deal of uncertainty about how this actually pans out. It will require a lot of good faith on the part of everybody involved, and we'll see whether that good faith materializes.
And Thomas, just to follow up, when you're talking about, you know, this great deal of uncertainty that surrounds this, are you talking specifically about the Digital Markets Act, the Digital Services Act, or both?
I'm talking about both, but it does seem to me, and I must say that my area is antitrust, so the Digital Markets Act is the one that I am much more deeply involved in. But it seems to me that the Digital Services Act, almost by design, it seems, incorporates a great deal more uncertainty. The Digital Markets Act will also have a great deal of questions surrounding it about what it means and what the companies who are deemed gatekeepers have to do and what they may not do.
Johannes, how much momentum did the effort to pass this legislation gain from the fact that there is so much disinformation out there with regard to the war in Ukraine, and also that there's so much disinformation out there when it comes to COVID-19?
Yeah, I think these developments that you highlight, they also highlighted, of course, the need to do something. They have influenced a little bit the negotiations in a way that we incorporated the crisis mechanism. Because one thing is that you have regular contacts or regular exchanges and these annual risk assessments. But another thing is that you have a situation that you could not preempt, like now the war in Ukraine, and to which you need to react as a platform. And we as a regulator would like to understand what platforms are doing, what they are seeing, and what they do to mitigate the risks. And this is why this crisis mechanism was incorporated now to allow these kind of ad hoc conversations and cooperation on these issues. But if I may add another point, because you mentioned the freedom of expression, the DSA, and I find this very important, is precisely there to ensure the freedom of expression. Because the one thing is to remove content, another thing is to avoid over-removal. So this is why, for example, in terms of views need to be very clearly written. People need to understand what they sign up to. People need to understand why content is removed, if it's removed. And they also need to have a means to redress in the future, to very easily say, I think there's an over-removal, please reinstate this content. So I think what we want to do here is to really give, and this is what Margrethe Vestager said, I think, also, you know, reinstate democracy in the online world. So do not give, let's say, the discretion only to the platforms, but also to a governance framework, which governs the way this works on it. So this is a very, very important point. And if I can make a last point to what Thomas said on where he said the rules are maybe not defined enough. Of course, this is rather generic law because it needs to be future-proof. I mean, we have nowadays certain number of platforms that were not existing, let's say, 10 years ago or 5 years ago, you know, and we do not know what will exist in 5 or 10 years from nowadays. So we need to have laws that are future-proof. The e-commerce directive that Katharina mentioned is 20 years old. So you see, we may, and we hope that we will have this law in place for a very long time. So it needs to be future-proof and to cover also at, you know, platforms that will only emerge from in the future.
Thomas, I saw you nodding along to some of what Johannes was saying there. It looked like you wanted to react. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I agree completely that precisely defining, for example, what constitutes harmful conduct is really just not possible, because new kinds of harmful content will arise, and it needs to be future-proof. So I don't disagree at all with that. But the fact that the content of harmful content is so uncertain is going to require a great deal of good faith on everyone's side in order to make this work, it seems to me.
Catalina, you know, the articles, the reporting about what's in the DSA, the Digital Services Act, says that it's going to allow people to be able to choose how content is presented to them. I want to ask you, is it actually going to allow people to stop algorithmic profiling that is set up, you know, to get more engagement? Are they actually going to be able to opt out of that?
So I think that there has indeed been a lot of public discourse around, for instance, targeted advertising. And Paul Tung, for instance, was an MEP who really has been speaking about this at length. What we can already see is that a lot of platforms are already creating parallel recommender systems. So, for instance, Instagram and Twitter, even TikTok have that right now. There are definitely different types of, for instance, For You pages or different types of feeds. And then some of them are based on more the time or date related factors. And some of them are based on, for instance, the people who you follow on a platform. So from that perspective, you could argue that already some changes are already being very visible. Now, the thing is that one of the major problems that I think the DSA perhaps can start to tackle but it is so complex that we still need a lot of other solutions, is the fact that the data broker market is very opaque. So do we even have a map of really understanding which companies are using the type of data that is being collected also by social media platforms, which types of platforms or marketplaces are not using that, what is the percentage of the platforms that use that? So all of these questions remain still to be answered, because the pace at which the online, the digital economy is developing is incredibly fast. And this is why I completely agree with what Johannes was mentioning, that we need future-proof regulation. The question is, how do we draw the line between not having too little content and context and having too much, as Thomas was mentioning, because otherwise sometimes we deal with legal uncertainty even when future-proof regulation is there. And the example that comes to mind is the Unfair Commercial Practices Directive, that has been and still can very nicely tackle dark patterns, which is another type of user manipulation that we see very much quoted in the public discourse around the DSA. But if you look at the definitions in Article 5, for instance, of the UCPD, and you see tests that are very, very vague, like an unfairness test, you still need to rely on a judge to interpret that. And if you don't have clear interpretations for very specific situations, then the market doesn't know what to do with that. And we see this very clearly with dark patterns.
Catalina, I also want to ask you for a moment about the another law that the EU enacted, the data privacy law called the General Data Protection Regulation. You know, there's been a lot of criticism that it has not been enforced vigorously enough. Are you concerned that the same thing might happen with the Digital Services Act?
I definitely see that we're moving into an era of digital enforcement, digital monitoring, and also market surveillance done not only by the data protection authorities, whether at European or national level, that are designed and have the mandate to implement and enforce the GDPR, but also with a lot of other agencies and a lot of other authorities. So I think that enforcement is going to be perhaps, we're going to see more and more enforcement in the future. The question that I would like to ask, perhaps for this discussion, but also for other debates, is how do we ensure that we have coherent enforcement across all of these agencies that are stakeholders in the digital market? And that is the million-dollar question.
Johannes, there are tech companies who say that these regulations could stifle innovation. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, if I could just quickly come back to the enforcement, because it's very different if you enforce data protection, which is enforced not only at a national level, but also at a regional level. For example, in Germany, it's the regions that are in charge, the data protection offices. Or if you have central enforcement, and that comes back to your first question, the DSA will be enforced for the big platforms, about 45 million users, by the Commission. And it's the same is true for the DMA when you really speak about the gatekeepers. So that is a completely different situation. And I would also like to add one point on the targeting, because what the DSA foresees is that users have an option to indeed opt out and say, look, I do not want to be targeted, and I want a recommender system that is not based on targeting. Now, you can, of course, say that is not very useful for some services. It is simply not useful, but the choice will be with the consumer. And then, of course, we have the ban for targeted advertisement for minors and for sensitive data. Now, on your question, The point of the DSA is to introduce obligations that come with size. So size matters. If you're a small company, you actually find it easier because you do not have all the big the same obligations of the big platforms. This is also one aspect. I mean, it is very important exactly that you do not stifle innovation. And this is exactly what the DSA and also the DMA in a way foresee, that you have different obligations for big players than for smaller ones. And the DMA, for example, gives rights to smaller competitors who, for example, use marketplaces to sell their products, to have access to their data, which they nowadays don't have. So it's exactly the opposite, actually. It protects the small competitors.
Thomas, we have a little less than a minute left. Let me just ask you very quickly, from your vantage point, does the EU have enough manpower to actually be able to monitor and enforce the Digital Services Act and the Digital Markets Act?
That was exactly the point I wanted to just raise. Both of these pieces of legislation together mark a huge increase in the amount of regulation in the tech sphere. And I tend to doubt that there will be sufficient resources deployed by the European Commission to be able to effectively enforce them.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Johannes Barke, Catalina Gawanta, and Thomas Vinier. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.